Welcome, everyone. I'd like to call our meeting to order this evening. We'd like to give a special welcome to all of our guests. You have brought a lot of energy to our chambers tonight, and so we welcome you. So tonight is the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, April 20th, 2022. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Bowen?
Here.
Councilmember Green? Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Well done. Let's see. Mr. Standish, upcoming meetings, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Stormwater Utility Commission will be holding their next meeting on April 21st at 4 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The April 26th Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. Then the Historic Preservation Commission will be meeting on May 2nd at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Water Utility Commission will be holding a study session on May 3rd at 12:30 in the Hopi Conference Room. Then the Planning and Zoning Commission will hold their next regular meeting on May 3rd at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the Town Council will hold their next regular session on May 4th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Tonight, Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize the following members of the Wilson Chapter of the National Junior Honor Society: Austin Christian, Allie Godfredson, Eden Hopkins, Daniel Prescott, and Julian Sanchez. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
This is a very rare honor for me. I've never recognized five students, but it's exciting. Tonight, it's my honor to introduce to you five eighth grade students from Wilson Junior High: Austin Christian, Eden Hopkins, Julian Sanchez, DJ Prescott, and Allie Godfredson. Excuse me. These five students are being recognized tonight for their commitment to the community as part of the Wilson Chapter of the National Junior Honor Society. The Wilson Chapter commits to at least two service projects each year and will have over 1,000 hours of community service by the time they complete this month. This past fall, the students collected 20 boxes filled with non-perishable food items for the Amphi Foundation, which provides service to make it possible for students to attend school ready to learn. On February 12th of this year, 15 members of the Wilson Chapter volunteered at the Pima Animal Care Center and handmade over 200 chew toys out of old T-shirts. So that's an idea if you're going to recycle T-shirts. While at the location, they were given a tour and spent quality time playing with some loving dogs looking for their forever homes. We're so proud of all of you, and I'm just honored to spotlight you this evening, and we can't wait to see what your futures hold.
Thank you.
Are there any parents here that would like to join us? Come on, don't be shy. It's going to be a crowded picture, but the more the better.
I'll have parents, if you can stand in the back, just so that way I can fit everyone in.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you very much. We're very proud of you, young people, and to your parents as well. Other council reports this evening?
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
This past week, we had two internal promotions within our police department. We had Tyler Nicholson, who was promoted to detective, and just to demonstrate the type of quality of our officers, I want to just read his professional certifications. He's an alert active shooter instructor, a NAZI post field training officer, FBI basic and intermediate sniper school, a firearms instructor for a handgun, shotgun, and rifle, a Colt armorer, a Glock armorer, and a general instructor. It's not somebody you want to mess with, how to say. Then we had Weston Barkley, who was promoted to sergeant, and his professional certifications, advanced explosive disposal techniques, criminal investigation school, hazardous device school, FBI bomb technician, law enforcement horizontal glazed nestogramics. I think that basically means he can investigate different types of crime scenes. I won't go into the details. General instructor, hazardous material technician, fire investigator 1, 2, 3, and 4, in fire and explosives, firearm instructor, and a Glock armor. So I think between the two of them, we've got ourselves pretty well covered, not to mention the other 100 or so sworn officers that we have. So just a shout-out to them, their hard work, and the quality of people you can expect if you ever are in the unfortunate situation of having to dial 911. So thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. This evening, our town manager is absent. She's on bereavement leave. Her father, Donald F. Post, passed away. Services are this Saturday. You can go to the Adair Mortuary website for his obituary. But our thoughts and prayers go out to Miss Jacobs, her daughter Rachel, and her family. I'll come back to you. And I also wanted to, we've had two events since our last town council meeting, celebrate Oro Valley and also the egg extravaganza. And I want to express my appreciation to Christy, to your team, for both of these events, incredibly successful, well attended by our community and others outside of our community, all the town staff that participated at the Celebrate Oro Valley, appreciate the information that they provided to those that came, and also to the Oro Valley Historical Society, who gave tours of the Push House. And it was just a great event. At the eggs extravaganza, there's always the challenge of are you going to have enough eggs for the children? Occasionally we see a few leaving in tears, but this year it was all smiles. And thanks to Dylan, I think we had 20,000 Easter eggs that were distributed. And they got swept away pretty quickly. It was fun to watch. And then also this Friday is Earth Day, and we as a town staff are going to spend a few hours Friday morning from 8:30 to 10:30 picking up litter in our community along La Cañada Drive and Lambert Lane. And I appreciate all the staff that will be participating. You know, the wonderful thing about litter pickup is that you see immediate results, so it's a gratifying experience. And then also just the fact that we have folks out collecting litter, I think, inspires others to do similarly. A lot of our roadways and trails are adopted by residents of our community who do a great job of helping to keep litter cleared away from our roadways and trails. So thanks to those staff members that will be able to participate this Friday. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Project Grad is approximately 3 weeks away, and they desperately need your assistance. They've lost one of their annual donors for grand prizes, so they're still looking for two $500 Visa gift cards to be donated. They're also only 40% of their volunteer base, and we need you to reach out and volunteer so that this grad night is going to be safe and sane for our young people. I'm going to give you two email addresses. Well, they're actually HTTPS links, and I'll do it very slowly. The first one is for volunteers, and it's https://tinyurl. So that would be tinyurl.com/wonderlandvolunteers. For prize donations, it's https://tinyurl.com/CDOPG prizes. Please, let's support this event and make sure, as I said, our children are having one of the safest graduation nights that they can. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Okay, seeing no other council reports, I'll invite Mr. Cornelison to present his report this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one item. As you all are aware, it is budget season, and no one is more excited than our budget and finance staff that are here this evening about that. So we have just finished wrapping up our town manager's recommended budget, and that is now publicly posted on the town's website for available for everyone to see. On behalf of town manager Mary Jacobs, I also want to recognize all the hard work that has gone into the budget and the process, especially from our executive leadership team here on the edge and their respective staffs, including also our budget team, and that specifically our chief information officer and up top, Chuck Boyer, Mr. Dave Gephardt, our CFO, Wendy Gomez, our budget and finance administrator, and then also our senior budget analyst, Chris Hutchinson, for all the exemplary work that they put into it. It's a lot of time, it's a lot of detail, and countless hours that they put into it, and we're excited to have that all for your consideration as we go forward in these next couple months. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. I've reviewed the agenda for tonight's meeting, and I would like to make a change. I'd like to bring the presentation one to have that be presented now. Are there any objections from council members? Okay. So we'll, Mr. Standish, presentation one.
Youth art presentation by Melissa Samzel from Innovation Academy.
So Ms. Melissa Samzel will present the youth art from Innovation Academy.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you so much for inviting Innovation Academy to showcase artwork. We're happy to be back in person again. We appreciate your support in our fine arts program. Innovation Academy opened in 2017. I've been the art teacher since then. And our art curriculum follows the Arizona State standards and our school's STEM curriculum. Tonight, you have a video that showcases just a tiny snippet of work from kindergarten through fifth grade. Our video begins with kindergarten art. They've learned weaving, color mixing, clay, and many more things. A lot of our lessons incorporate two-dimensional artwork and three-dimensional clay and sculptures that will follow it. For example, in one of the kindergarten lessons, the kids learned how to color mix through the story mouse paint, and then they got to make clay mice. In first grade, you'll see a variety of art. They were able to learn about hot air molecules and design their own hot air balloons. We even had fourth graders design a prototype and bring in an actual hot air balloon that they designed to show the first graders, so that was pretty neat. Our second graders took a field trip to the local lavender farm this year, came back into the art room, and they learned about pointillism through artist George Seurat and created lavender using Q-tips and paint. In third grade, some of the art you'll see Edvard Munch's The Scream and the kids' own personal interpretation of that. In fourth grade, students learned about fauve artists, such as Henri Matisse. Fauve artists were known to paint with untraditional colors, and at the time, a lot of people thought that was really wild, so they'd refer to them as wild beast. And so the kids had fun that they could use wild colors in creating their self-portraits, and really enjoyed that. I also, in our art curriculum, include architecture and famous landmarks. So with our fourth graders, you'll see Vincent van Gogh's Starry Night connecting with the Eiffel Tower. My fifth graders, this year they've been preparing for middle school with lessons on value, perspective, self-portraits. Recently, we just wanted to do something fun, so we did some paper mache pencils, which you'll see in the video. They did an architecture lesson studying castles in Europe. And in the video, I have, of course, clay dragons that we did with that. So much of our lessons based on elements and principles of art, tying into artists and art movements, and the students really have a lot of fun. So right now, we're currently showing art in three different places at school and the Tucson Mall. So thank you again for showing here. If it'd be okay, I'll put some flyers. The Tucson Mall showcasing the whole district, which supports our Project Grad in the Amphi District. So thank you so much again for supporting our program and showcasing the kids' art. It's a blessing to be their teacher. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Amsel. Nice work. I'd like to invite the students that are with us tonight, if you'll come forward so that we can take a picture, a group picture of you. Just come forward. And Lindsay will get you.
Hi, where are we going?
Yeah, up, right up here. Yeah, everybody come forward. Pardon? Yeah, we can. Maybe a council, if you want to come up here behind them. Is that possible, Lindsay? Yeah, I think maybe over here. Lindsay, will you get the council if they're standing back here behind them? Does that work? Okay. And Ms. Samsel, you're awesome. Parents, you are as well. We appreciate you so much, each of you young people that were here tonight. And we know it's a school night, so we're going to give you a minute to vacate the chambers if you would like to, or you're certainly welcome to stay. You're welcome.
Hey, Joe, can you remind me of the videos online, I guess, for the parents?
Okay, the video is online for parents. Thank you for being here tonight. Thanks, Ms. Samsel. Good night. Okay, it's a little quieter. Thanks, Ms. Samsel. Yeah. All right, we'll go back to the original order of our agenda this evening. Informational item, the FY21-22 financial update through February 2022. I believe Councilmember Bowen, you have some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I do. Can we bring the presentation up? And can we go to slide 4 of 11? Sorry, back one, please. So my first question is for David Gephardt. Is it correct that the initial budget deficit that we predicted for 21-22 was $14.2 million?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct. That is what the initial budget deficit was projected to be.
And on tonight's report, we're at about $5.4 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct.
And I want to thank everyone for allowing me to ask that very simple question, because I hear you out there. When we spend money, I'm spending money too. I face a property tax. I face higher sales tax. And what I want to let people know is their inflation can be a largely neutral thing. It does cost us more, but our government receipts are higher. And I've been very vocal about this. I believe I said several months ago that we're going to be at approximately a $5 million deficit for the year, even though we spent $10 million to fix our pension issue. Why did I know that? Because I can look at the data, and the retail sales tax data, it's relentlessly positive. It's positive as we proceed through the year, and it's positive year over year. So even in August and September, when we have 2 or 3 months worth of data, we have high confidence that we are going to greatly reduce our deficit simply by retail sales tax, simply by collecting what's owed to us. And can we go to the slide for the Community Center Fund, please? The corresponding graph. Dave, is it correct that the estimated surplus for this year for the Community Center Fund is about $3
million? Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bond, that is correct.
So when I put those two numbers together, we started at $14 million deficit in the general fund, a flat community center fund. What I'm seeing right now is $5 million deficit in the general fund and a $3 million surplus in the community center fund. We're actually coming out pretty flat at the end of the year. And I hope that will alleviate people's concerns. When I make a vote to spend money, I'm watching our liquidity. And if we don't talk about these things every month, I think the public can be needlessly concerned that we're going beyond what we can safely spend. The money is coming in. It won't be coming in forever, but right now, we are being very responsible. And I'd like to remind everyone, when we have this flat budget, that's going to include a $3 million surplus in the community center and a $10 million payment to our pension obligation. That's one time only, going to address a long-term concern in our town, and we're never going to have to talk about that payment again. Our financial numbers for this year, to me, are very positive. But something that's not so positive is how early in the meeting we're talking about this. You know, this is an informational item. I went back and I looked at the history of our town back to 2008, and from 2008 to 2018, talking about these financial numbers was a consent agenda item. What's the difference between that and an informational item? When we have a consent agenda item, we as a council, we're approving it. We said, I looked at it, and I said it's good. When it's an informational item, we're just looking at it. So I strongly encourage that we return to that previous good practice. There's nothing more important than talking about our finances. Our finances impact everything. When people come in, it's almost always about something financial. It's going to either impact them or impact the town. So I hope that we'll return to that good practice of making this a consent agenda item in the future, as it was for 10 years under two different mayors. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Other questions? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Mr. Gephardt, can you please... Oh, there you are. Sorry, I was kidding. Okay, Mr. Gephardt, could you please explain why there was a projected $14 million deficit? Mr. Bowen alluded a little bit to the police pension. Could you elaborate that a little bit on that a little further, and also where we are at now, just so we get a little more background?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. Basically, when we set the budget, we were very conservative with our revenue estimates, understanding that we were still in a COVID environment. Basically, when we look back, when we set the budget, it's during this time of year. So it's March, it's April, it's May, and our forecasts are imperfect, and we don't really know what impact COVID was going to have on this fiscal year. So when we, and especially as it relates to items such as
fare box revenues and things of that nature. We were just very, very conservative. We didn't know if we were going to have another spike in COVID rates or what type of impact that might have. And certainly we did not predict higher inflation. We didn't predict this high of inflation. So we were just all the way around. We tried to be very conservative, both on the expenditure side and on the revenue side, especially on the revenue side, just because of the uncertainty moving into this fiscal year. As Councilmember Bowen noted correctly, things have been very strong this fiscal year, especially as it relates to our sales tax revenues. But really, all the way around, we've had a very, very strong year from a revenue standpoint, and then we've also been very mindful of our expenditures and our spending, and we've had more vacancies. We have not been impacted by the Great Resignation like some organizations or entities have, but we have been impacted as an organization. So we're seeing some of those vacancy savings materialize as well, especially as it relates to our public safety, our police force. So that's basically what's happening there as it relates to the general fund specifically.
Okay, thank you. And I really appreciate all of that you did and your team did in helping to budget conservatively. But that $14 million projected deficit and then the $5.4 million estimated now in the general fund includes the $10 million that went straight towards our liability from our police pension, doesn't it?
Yes, and Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, it does. And one thing that I failed to include as well is the impact that these grant revenues are having that we're seeing, both in terms of the CARES dollars and the ARPA monies. We've addressed this in prior council meetings, but the revenue recognition on those was kind of up in the air. We didn't really receive final direction on those until January of this year, January 2022. So, and very early on January 2022. So there have been some issues there that have worked in our favor. The federal government has decided to basically give a standard deduction of about $10 million, to cities and towns, local governments that receive those ARPA funds, which allowed us to basically unfence those and utilize them for really general government type purposes. So that's also been very helpful. There's a number of factors involved. There always are to kind of turn around what a projected deficit, into this. And it's still a deficit. We're still projecting a deficit, but it's just clearly not as large as what we anticipated. So,
okay, thanks. It's great to hear such good news. Thanks.
Councilmember Solomon.
Gary, I think you alluded to this. This past year, have we had record sales tax revenues at an all-time high in the history of Oro Valley?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that is correct. We are seeing record sales tax numbers in the history of Oro Valley.
Okay. And we received a windfall of about $15.5 million from the federal government under different names regarding COVID.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, the total number will actually exceed over $20 million when you include the CARES Act monies received by the town.
All right. And then you mentioned we have a significant number of vacancies in our staff that's also contributing to the balance sheet.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that is correct.
So I seem to draw a different conclusion than my fellow council members do. We have record income in tax revenue, a $20 million windfall from the federal government, and yet we're still looking at a deficit in our budget. Now, let me remind you, since 2011 through 2018, every budget year we had several million dollars in surplus. Yet with absolute record income and record money from the federal government, we are still looking at a deficit. That doesn't seem like we're spending or taking care of the people's money very well. So there's two sides to every story, and I'm quite frankly very concerned with the amount of spending this council has been doing and how in the world we could be in a deficit situation when we've received more money than we ever dreamed possible.
Any other questions? Councilmember Nicholson.
And Mr. Gephardt, this year we spent $10 million to pay down the pension, right? So we're showing that as a budget deficit. The years prior, when we had the police pension deficit, was that considered a budget deficit as well?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, no, it was not considered a budget deficit because we did not, we paid that in the ordinary course of our payroll, and so we ran surpluses, which is why we're showing such a high reserve balance in our general fund.
So I just want to point out that we still had a deficit of $10 million in our money. We took our money and we used that, the money that we had saved, but we're counting that as basically spending of money that we already had, correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, that is correct.
Mr. Mayor.
Are you finished, Councilmember Nicholson?
Yeah, that's
right. Councilmember Solomon?
We took $10 million from savings and paid down an obligation we had. That doesn't start factoring into deficits. We've always carried the unfunded liability in our books, and it was very well funded. Now, $10 million does not explain how, with a $20 million one-down payment using that rationale, plus a $10 million payment out of savings, that's $30 million extra money we should have. So we should be seeing a $30 million surplus, not a deficit.
I've been pretty liberal with all the council people with regard to this information item. It is an information item. It's the time to ask questions if you have them. The positions you may have with regard to those questions are for either a study session or when you go to approve the budget.
Okay. Any additional questions? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. First speaker is John Eisenberger, and if you could please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley. Thank you.
I'm a resident of Oral Valley. It was encouraging that Harry Green attempted to persuade the rest of the council to finally correct the blatant ADA access violations that have existed at the community center since July 26, 1990. Over 30 years of discrimination against impaired persons, preventing their access both for the use of the facilities and employment, is disgusting. Oral Valley should be just ashamed. Unfortunately, the temporary solutions approved by the council don't comply with the ADA and don't improve accessibility. I was shocked that Mr. Kessler didn't participate in this important discussion and decision. After all, he is the subject matter expert on these matters. Number one, the ramp will never provide accessible legal ADA access. Accessibility problem persons with impairments should never attempt going up that ramp. The ramp must have a slope of less than 12 to 1. That's 1 inch height for every 12-inch run. And every 6 feet of ramp, so every 6 inches that you raise the ramp, you have to have a 5 foot deep horizontal section. That would require a ramp of about 300 feet long from the parking lot. That ramp was designed for restaurant deliveries and was never intended for access by impaired person. It is currently extremely dangerous for impaired accessibility and represents an unacceptable liability to Oro Valley. Plus, it does nothing to improve accessibility to the other two levels. The proposed stairway lift chairs don't comply with the ADA requirements either. Stair lift platforms are approved, but they're poor options in this situation. It was a total waste of time and effort because Oro Valley's subject matter expert didn't know the subject matter. Stop evading this critical problem and fix it correctly. Nothing short of an elevator is acceptable. Council members, please immediately get the facts from Mr. Kessler or bring in someone that knows the subject matter. Vote to invalidate your last community center ADA decisions and make a decision based upon facts and ADA legal requirements. Mr. Seidels and Mr. Kessler, this is a formal Oro Valley sidewalk, bicycle, and shared use pathways design regulations that you stated do not exist. That's the Oro Valley Zoning Code, Section 26.2, Design Standards G, Street Design Standards. You are wrong. It is impossible for Oro Valley's leadership to know everything necessary to make the decisions they make. They are forced to rely on the town's subject matter experts. Unfortunately, some of these subject matter experts don't know the subject matter. Well, that's about 10% of what I had to say.
Thank you. Mr. Zinkin?
It's nice to have the children leave the place before I come up here. Mike Zinkin, Oro Valley resident. Mayor and Council, it's time to take back control of this town from the town manager and abide by the policies and council policies and town codes set forth already. I've commuted with you on more than one occasion, all of you, more than one occasion about a meeting on March 4th, 2015, where the council passed a motion taking $2.1 million from the general fund to kickstart the community center fund. The motion stated it would be paid back within 10 years with an annual payback of $120,000 a year. I've noticed that the $120,000 payback was not made during this fiscal year, and I brought this to the attention of the town manager, and she replied by saying, quote, "A prior council's actions cannot bind a current or future council," unquote. One council member up there, one of you guys up there, even wrote her and said, "I read what you wrote, Zinkin, and your response can't be verified." Town Code Article 2, Section 4-7 says the town will work under Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order said the motion could be modified two ways, a motion to reconsider or a motion to rescind. A motion to reconsider has got to be made before the next scheduled meeting, as you all know, because some of you tried to do that. But you were stifled by the town manager in violation. You were going with Council Policy 11, amending an agenda, and the town manager wouldn't let you do it. One more violation. A motion to rescind can be made at any time. It requires five votes. Unless you move to rescind that 2015 motion, you are obligated to continue to pay back to the general fund that loan that was taken back in 2015. Town managers hired a CIP director, a position that was not budgeted. Town Policy 6 says a town manager must come to you for any unbudgeted expenses. The town manager tells me it was a temporary position funded by the CIP fund. Temporary or not, it was not funded and not approved by you guys. And using CIP money for that is also a violation, because CIP money is one-time revenue spent for one-time expenses. And an employee is not a one-time expense. It's an ongoing expense. One more violation. Page 226 of the fiscal year 2021 adopted budget allocates $105,000 during this fiscal year, 21-22, for council chambers audiovisual upgrades. In a recent communication with staff, I was advised that the council chamber renovation, what you see now, cost $607,125.74 and was paid for with Federal CARES Act funding. I don't care where the funding came from. You didn't authorize it. You need to authorize that. She needs, or he needs, the town manager needs to come to you with any unbudgeted expenses. There's $600,000 of that money you were talking about, Councilman Solomon, the one that did this, and it was not authorized. It was done arbitrarily by the town manager. You've got to stop this, guys. You need to gather up the town manager, set the boundaries, and enforce the rules. At this point, you have enough evidence to terminate her for cause. Either
thank,
you do
thank
it your
you, Mr.
way,
Zinkin. Your time
and
is
do something.
Elapsed.
You guys are ultimately responsible. She's violating it. You're responsible for not holding her accountable.
Vicki Terrace.
Hi, my name is Vicki Terrace, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. But today I'd like to speak on behalf of another resident of Oro Valley by the name of Michelle Leibing. She could not attend in person for medical reasons. She says, "I have a life-threatening medical condition. The paramedics have had to come to my home and transport me to the Oro Valley Hospital multiple times in the last 6 years. The intersection of Calle Concordia and La Cañada does not have a traffic light, so even during normal days, traffic backs up several house links and blocks all of our driveways for extended periods of time. Also, traffic from the high school and traffic diverted from road work or accidents off of Oracle create the same effect. Having my driveway blocked by traffic could prevent emergency vehicles and paramedics from providing the medical treatment and transportation I need in a timely fashion. Adding a much higher amount of traffic from the church rezone project at all hours of the day and night creates an even higher medical risk for me. Therefore, I am very against the rezone for the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. Thank you on behalf of Michelle Leibing.
Darlene Baker. Backer, Baker? Backen.
First of all, I want to thank you for the council for spotlighting our youth. That was very nice.
Could you please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley?
Okay. My name is Darlene Backen, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I am a homeowner who will be directly impacted if the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene is allowed to rezone from the current R145 resident to a planned area development. Currently, the area is composed of several 5-acre parcels and is primarily residential. And some people have horses. I'm a retired teacher and spent many years working with the youth. The concept of expanding the current facility in theory may be good, but this is just not the right location for an enterprise of this nature and magnitude. We already have a high school and an aquatic center within a block, and thus this just seems excessive. The local residents and animals will be greatly impacted by the increased traffic, noise, lighting of a project of this magnitude. Additional issues are water consumption, drainage in the area, and possibly damaging of property values. On behalf of my neighbors and myself, I'd like to urge you to disapprove this proposed rezoning request. Thank you.
Ann Young.
Hello, my name is Ann Young. I live in Oro Valley. First of all, I'd like to say thank you again for highlighting the youth, especially the grad night. So I'm a retired high school counselor from Amphi, and I know how dangerous it can be for those kids after graduation. But with grad night and the wonderful prizes they might get, they spend the night at the school safely. So I'd say thank you for that. Also, the artwork was wonderful. Picasso cannot even brag about beyond the... I'm going to talk emotionally about the rezoning that the Oro Valley Church wishes to have done. I'd like to have you imagine, if you will, that you have just purchased a 5-acre parcel that has absolutely fabulous views of Push Ridge and the Catalina Mountains. Zoning is for one house per almost 4 acres presently on the 10 acres they purchased. I'm bounded on two sides by the church property. The important side, of course, is the view from the east. You build your home on about 1 acre, You have left the rest untouched desert that is often so beautiful that you feel that you're surrounded by a fabulous park. It's filled with Palo Verde, mesquite, ironwood trees, and many, many varieties of beautiful cactus. Then one day, the church that lies next to the south end of your property begins a great expansion phase. They are able to buy the 10 acres bounding to the east, which is presently zoned for one house for three and the third acres. The church immediately bulldozes down all the buildings, all native growth, and historic sites that were once part of this 10-acre parcel. Suddenly, you receive news from your neighbor that the church has decided they want to build a 60 or 55-foot football stadium that most colleges can't afford right behind your home. Luckily, I think they were told that wasn't going to fly, so they backed off of that 55-60-foot building right east. Anyway, thank you very much, and I appreciate you listening to us.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Young. Tim Terrace.
I just want to say those kids color better than I do. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, Councilman, and city officials. I'm Tim Terrace. I live in Oro Valley, directly across the street from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene to the west. I am speaking tonight against the church's request for rezone and expansion on a basis of water usage. The proposal calls for athletic facilities that are larger than exist at Canyon del Oro, and that adjoins, CDO adjoins their property to the east. There is no reclaimed water available at the site, so potable water will have to be used for any and all activities. The negative impact of this proposal is staggering. It's well known the western U.S. has been in a drought condition for almost 20 years. Officials have begun using the term aridization to describe the drought. The three lower basin states are Arizona, Nevada, and California. Last week, the Department of the Interior Bureau of Reclamation announced they would be withholding 480,000 acre-feet of water from Lake Powell, normally released into Lake Mead. Officials are anticipating further water cutbacks in the future. This directly affects the 336-mile Colorado-Arizona project, which supplies drinking water to Phoenix and Tucson. The CAP is already suffering this year under previously planned cutback in water. In addition, experts are concerned that if the water drops much lower in Powell and Mead, power generation at Glen Canyon Dam and Hoover Dam will be at risk. I am not an environmentalist. I'm a realist. Oro Valley needs to carefully manage our precious resources, and water is at the top of the list. We all need it. We all use it. Please reject the proposed rezone and expansion requested by the church. Thank you very much.
Doug Dalby.
Good evening and thank you. My name is Doug Dalby. I am a resident of Oro Valley. My wife and I have lived at 9380 North Calle Buena Vista for 42 years. We have two daughters who attended a parochial school, K through 8, then graduated from CDO in the U of A. We incurred the extra expense, time, and effort to send our daughters to a Christian school. We're members of a neighborhood church and understand the value of outreach and evangelism. However, we are totally opposed to the planned area rezoning and planned area development that the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene is proposing. There are multiple excellent reasons to oppose this rezoning, which include traffic, flooding, lighting, noise, water, and heat islands. We oppose this proposed rezoning for all of these good reasons, but our main opposition is that the rezoning would violate the trust that has been placed on the council to maintain and preserve the character, quality, and integrity of this unique neighborhood. Once that quality is gone, it cannot be restored. Amphi School District had the foresight in 1964 to purchase the CDO land for educational purposes, which did not create the conflicts that this proposal has created and will continue to create. If only Church Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene had the foresight to purchase a location where they could achieve their dreams, then they wouldn't be encroaching on a quiet neighborhood. This proposal, which involves the construction of a 75,000 square foot for-profit, their term, commercial building along a two-lane residential street, is not in keeping with the proposal of a planned area development, which in section 24.4 of Oro Valley's rezoning regulations states that a pad's purpose is to, quote, improve and protect the public health, safety, and welfare, close quote. This rezoning has nothing positive to offer the residents of the neighborhood, as evidenced by the 100% opposition of the adjoining neighbors. Further review of section 24.4 states that, among other considerations, a pad should, quote, encourage patterns of land use which decrease auto travel, increase public access to mass transit, reduce energy consumption and demand, minimize adverse environmental impacts, foster a rational pattern and relationship between land uses for the mutual benefit of the community, protect existing neighborhoods from harmful encroachment by intrusive or disruptive development, close quotes. If a 75,000 square foot commercial building and associated facilities doesn't satisfy the council's definition of intrusive and disruptive encroachment in an R144 neighborhood, then I and other voters would like to know what does. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Anthony Ferrara.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You got it right again. Vice Mayor, Council Members, my name is Anthony Ferrara, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I am, like most of my neighbors, I'm adjacent to the proposed rezoning of the Church of Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and I just wanted to restate that I am opposed to their development. It would do irreparable and permanent harm to the neighborhood, to the property that I own, and to my neighbors as well. Thank you.
Elizabeth Robb.
My name is Elizabeth Robb, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I've lived directly west of the Church of the Nazarene for 23 years now. And when I first moved in, we purchased our property. It wasn't a terribly large church. It had lots of vegetation between us and them and tucked sort of back in there. It was a little small. It wasn't real noisy. Didn't have a lot of outdoor lights. Didn't cause a lot of traffic and was reasonably quiet. And it mostly fit into the neighborhood. Over the years, I have watched this church. And it expanded its parking lot. And then they bought the land on their northern border. And they expanded it some more. And they made the building bigger. And then they added more parking and a new wing and new lights in the parking lot. They didn't have those before, and they're less than 100 yards from my bedroom window. And they also trimmed up all their trees and all the plants so it would look nice. Well, it now does absolutely nothing to block the view and the noise and the disruption to the neighborhood. It does no blockage whatsoever anymore. Shortly after they did all those big, huge expansions, I actually had to move my mailbox, because the post office said they were not going to deliver my mail anymore because there was so much water running off down the street now that was not there before. It was causing ruts and sand and things piling up, and no matter how many rocks we threw out there, we couldn't get it solid enough for them to do it. So I had to move my mailbox. Let's see. Then they continued to expand. They bought the church. There was a nice little quiet church next to CDO, between them and CDO, and then now they've bought the block north of them, and that's what's led to their request for a rezoning. And they've also started having these outdoor programs that were relatively quiet to start with. Well, we can hear them inside our house now. And quite honestly, this Easter at 5:30, actually slightly before 5:30 in the morning, they were playing music so loud it woke up my kids and my husband. That's just ridiculous. And there were no cars in their parking lot, so it was not an Easter service. And we could hear them saying, sound check. The level of traffic and congestion and noise from the hundreds of people arriving and departing on numerous days of the week has already added to the congestion from the high school and the city park and the aquatic center. And approving the rezoning and doubling or tripling that traffic and noise and congestion is just going to make things even worse for the neighborhood. They've already expanded the church beyond their ability to blend into the neighborhood. Approving the request to rezoning will allow them to build a sizable commercial park in a residential neighborhood. It has no business being there. It should be in a commercial area. Thank you all so much for your time.
I have no more blue cards this evening, so I'll close call to audience.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
According to the call of audience instructions, it says council members may ask town staff to review the matter. If not already under review, we've heard several times regarding existing hydrology issues at that location. I would ask that staff review that if they're not already looking at it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. Okay, Mr. Standish, presentation two.
Presentation and update regarding the public safety personnel retirement system pension funding.
Chief Financial Officer Dave Gephardt will introduce this item, and then we'll introduce the PSPRS representative who will present this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. The presenter for this item, the presentation this evening, presented this item to our Budget and Finance Commission a couple months ago. And as you're probably all aware, the mayor is part of that as the liaison for the council. And he requested this item be presented to the council as an update to the status of our PSPRS pension funding, the policy direction that the council has provided, and of course the results of the reserve payment that was made early this fiscal year, as well as the pension obligation bonds that were issued. So with that, I'd like to introduce Clark Partridge, who works with PSPRS. He will be presenting on this item this evening, and after his presentation, he's presenting via Zoom, and after his presentation, both Clark and I will be available for any comments or questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Partridge, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. It's a pleasure to be with you here this evening. We'll go through a brief presentation for you, and we'll look forward to answering any questions that you may have. As you know, we'll revisit a few things that we chatted about before when you were considering putting money into toward your pension liability. This is the pension funding equation. Again, just to revisit this, it's very basic. Where the money comes from is on the left. It comes from contributions and investment income. Where the money goes is on to benefits and to expenses of the plan. By far, the biggest number in the equation is the benefits that is here. But of course, where the money comes from, it either comes from contributions or investments. When pensions are funded lower than significantly lower than 100%, they just can't generate enough investment income on their own. And so there's additional contributions that are required to start to make up that ground. Looking on this slide, this will go through and help understand those concepts a little bit better. When actuaries come in, they estimate what the future benefits that are going to be paid out under the pension obligation. And then they discount those to a present value as of the valuation date. And that's this lower bar, the present value of future benefits. Of that present value of future benefits, a certain amount of those are earned up to the date of the actuarial valuation. That represents the actuarial accrued liability. So that's the service that's been earned up to the valuation date. The difference between that and the present value of benefits is that present value of normal costs, and that's what your normal cost contributions pay for going forward. If your assets are less than the accrued actuarial liability, then you have an unfunded actuarial liability. That amount is then amortized over a period of time so that you can provide those excess additional contributions to catch up to that actuarial accrued liability, which is essentially where you should be pacing to make sure that you have enough assets to be able to pay for those future benefits. Here is a snapshot of your most recent actuarial valuation. It focuses on the liability portion for tiers one and two. I've taken some of these numbers and put them on the next slide so they can be seen more easily. As of 6/30/21, you had a present value of benefits of approximately $81.3 million. The actuarial accrued liability that we chatted about is approximately $70.8 million. And the actuarial value of assets was $46.8 million. So that gave you an unfunded actuarial value of assets of $24 million. A funded ratio is about 66.1%. And your employer contribution rate was 43.47%. The market value of assets, the actual assets, we had a very good year from an investment perspective. And the actual market value as of June 30, 2021 was $51.2 million, which is over that actuarial value of assets. That difference is amortized over a seven-year period of time. And so that will offset future fluctuations and volatility with investments. On July the 6th, the town paid an additional $27.6 million towards their unfunded liability. As has been pointed out, some of that came from financing, but some of that came as a part of your general fund reserves. And those general fund reserves, of course, as the way the expenditures are required by law, it was required to be counted as an expenditure within the budget, even though you're taking assets and essentially reducing a liability that was on your financial statements. So just adjusting your June 30/21 actuarial valuation for that additional payment, you can see that your actuarial value of assets increased from $46.8 to $74.4 million. You can see the increase in the market value of assets from $51.2 million to $78.8 million. And you can see that you eliminated that unfunded actuarial liability, as well as you increased your funding ratio from 66.1% to 105.1%. Your contribution rate that was required also diminished. But since that was built into your budget, you've continued to make that payment. And that will give you an additional approximately $2.3 million toward your savings. My understanding is that you as a council have authorized that to continue until you reach a funded ratio of 110%. So a couple of things that I would point out is that based upon assuming we don't know what the assumed rate of return or the actual rate of return versus the assumed rate of return is this year. As everyone knows, this has been a very much more difficult year than the last year as a prior year. And we're tracking a little bit below the assumed rate of return for the current year. The stock market has rebounded recently here in the last week or so. So we still don't know exactly where we're going to end up. But there are some gains that have been built up previously, as well as your funded status that is going to be able to offset some of this risk, and as well as an additional $2 million. So in that risk mitigation column, I just wanted to point out a few things. By being 105.1% funded, you have about $3.6 million of risk mitigation to actuarial and investment risk going forward. You also have an additional $4.4 million in risk mitigation from the additional market value of assets that's being amortized over the next 6 years. And you also have, again, additional approximately $2.3 million that you're adding towards that as you hit, as you move towards your 110% funding goal. Again, coming back to revisit the pension funding equation, you can see that you've made some additional contributions and you can already start to see the dividends that are being paid towards that as you work to meeting that ongoing pension obligations that you have for benefits. This is just taking that same slide and just overlaying it here. The blue arrow on the left was approximately where your assets were in relation to your accrued actuarial accrued liability and the present value of future benefits. It was about 66.1%. Now you've been able to move that to 105%, and that's growing. And so you're going to give additional cushion. And this is going to allow you to manage your liability in a much more prudent and reliable manner, and really takes a lot of budget pressure off future budgets. And I know that's been a topic that you've been addressing here is how do you address things on an ongoing budget perspective, and from your pension liability perspective and how you've chosen to manage that, it's going to reduce some stress on those future budgets. And just wanted to give some of those updates and available for any questions that you may have.
Questions from council?
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Hi, could we go back to the prior slide with the numbers? Okay, great. So first question, funded ratio. On 2021, it was 66.1%. Exactly what does that represent in real terminology regarding our officers under this plan and their potential retirement?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Solomon. The calculation of that is simply taking the actuarial value of assets, that's $46.8 million, dividing that by the actuarial accrued liability, the $70.8 million, and that would give you that 66.1%. Again, that actuarial accrued liability, if I just go back here just a little bit, that's essentially what the liability that's been earned as of that point in time. And that really is the goal is to have approximately that in assets or maybe a little bit more than that so that you're on pace to making sure that you are fully funding your actuarial liability that's calculated as of that actuarial evaluation date. And so that by bringing that up to 105%, which is on this slide here, you've essentially brought your assets up to where they are greater than that actuarial accrued liability. So now when people talk about an unfunded liability, you've eliminated that and you're now ahead of the game a little bit. And you now have approximately not only the $3.6 million here, but also another $4.4 million, or in essence, about almost $8 million that you're ahead of that actuarial accrued liability. And of course, that market value of assets is greater by that $4.4 million. That's because we had a 27.8 million percent return on investments last year. The current year has been tracking as of the end of January is about 3.6%, which is less than that 7.3%. I would expect probably if we were to take it as of today's date, it would probably be a little bit higher than that 3.6%. But in any case, at this point in time, we're estimating that's going to be less than the assumed rate of return of 7.3%. But it does mean that you're on a very good track to be able to manage your pension liability on an ongoing basis. You've made a long-term commitment towards your police officers. I heard some of the comments that you made earlier about how proud you are of your forces. And this demonstrates your commitment to them and their pension and that you're properly funding that and honoring their commitment to your community.
Let me ask the question in a different manner. We're told we have a certain amount of funded of retirement or pension obligation and some unfunded. Does 100% or 100, does that represent what we would be required to pay if this year 100% of the officers decided to retire? Or does, exactly what does that represent? That's what I'm trying to understand. All our officers, not everyone is qualifies for retirement this year. There's different retirement plans, and I wouldn't expect all of our officers to retire in the same year. So is that what the 100% funded represents, our ability to pay the pensions if all of a sudden every single officer were to retire?
Yes and no. Essentially, the 100% funding would be to be able to pay for all the liability that has been earned up to this point. That doesn't take into account any of the future earnings that, will be incurred by working, for example, over the coming year or years until their retirement.
Okay, I guess I'm just not clear on that.
So the 100% would take care of all the pension liability that has been earned by the officers and those who have already retired as of that actuarial valuation date.
That's okay.
And that assumes that the assets that you have as of that point would earn on average going forward 7.3% into the future.
And that would also assume no additional contributions on the town's part other than the current year obligation. Whereas in the past, the town had been paying $2 million a year to decrease the unfunded liability. Well, once again, even if that covers 100% of what technically is owed, it's not collectible that year. The officers still haven't qualified for retirement. They may have another 20 years for retirement. We would have 20 years to collect those funds to be ready to pay for that retirement. Okay, one other question on this slide. I want to go back to the others. This is another thing. If we can go back to the one we were right. Okay.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. The one we... yes, that one. So okay. This said June 30th, 21... we had an unfunded liability of $24 million and change. Yet we paid $27,600,000 towards the fund. Why would we pay more money than we are actually our unfunded liability is? That seems like if you had a mortgage that you owed $100,000 on and you wanted to pay it off, you'd pay $100,000. You wouldn't go on offer and pay $107,000 just to have some reserve in case something happens. So how do we go from $24 million to $27,600,000?
Well, and Mr. Mayor and Council Member Solomon, you hit it right on the head. There are differences in liabilities between this pension liability and a mortgage. If you have a mortgage or if you did a financing, you borrowed a principal amount and you pay against that principal amount, and that principal amount is going to diminish. In this case, you have your pension liability as of June 30, 21 is a present value of future cash flows. And those future cash flows are estimated, but they can change. For example, people can live longer. That would increase your pension liability. That's good for your officers, certainly, but it increases your pension liability. You could have a disability that occurs. So a number of things that could happen that could increase that liability. We could, for example, this year, from an investment perspective, earn less than the assumed rate of return. Now, we've got some build-in accumulated gains to help offset that going forward, but there's risk there involved with that as well. So this isn't like a mortgage where you have a known certain amount that you need to pay off. It's just simply an estimate of all those future cash flows. And knowing that there's so many estimates that go into that, and any of those estimates could be better or worse than what is estimated at the actuarial valuation date.
Okay, but doesn't it still mean that we could have paid the $24 million and had an extra $3.5 million for use in other very high priority town needs?
You could have done that. That was a choice that the council certainly had as a collective body. You chose this route, and that, again, will set you up very well as you manage future budgets and manage your liability going forward.
Well, it'll set us up very well in this category.
Mr. Mayor, if I may jump in there and just address Council Member Solomon's question and issue here. When these calculations were made as of June 30th, 21, as you'll recall, we did not... We weren't aware of what these numbers were really until the report was released, which was in mid-December of 2021. And so when the council made the policy decision, our liability actually at that point in time was $27.6 million. But because we had such a great, which we didn't know at the time, had such a great earnings year in the plan from an investment standpoint, that is really what created that difference. Our liability went from $27.6 million down to $24 million that you see here. And, of course, the pension obligation bonds were already issued. This is part and parcel why it really hits home to the point of why we utilize reserves, the $10 million reserve feature, and didn't bond the entire amount, because if we would have bonded the entire amount, that would have hardened that liability. As it stands now, we only bonded $17 million. So we've still got $7 million of cushion between the liability as of June 30th, 2021, and what we actually bonded. And that, you know, that's cushion in case we have other, you know, if this year mirrored last year and we have another great year the following year, we still would not be over-bonded as it relates to this liability. So I just wanted to
But only as it relates to this liability, not other liabilities that we have coming up that are a high need. We now have less borrowing capacity. But what is the other question I have in this slide is $2 million savings. Does that take into account the fact that we're also making debt payments in that $2 million savings? Where does that come from?
Well, this $2 million savings here comes from the comparison of the required contribution rate that was from the June 30, 21 valuation and what you would, the normal cost portions. And it's simply eliminating that unfunded liability contribution portion of the contribution rate.
Doesn't that simply mean since we made this big cash payment, we now don't have to make our annual payment that we had been in the past?
No, you still have to pay the normal cost contribution going forward.
And what about the debt service on the loan we borrowed? Is that included in that $2 million savings?
No, that $2 million savings would go towards that debt service payment that you would have.
So it's not truly a $2 million savings. Because we're now writing a check to the debt service.
Yeah, this is the portion that related to your pension liability and your pension contributions. Then you would take that and then overlay that with your other debt financing payments and things as you look and manage that going forward from a more comprehensive perspective.
Right. Mr. Mayor, if I can just jump in here and provide a little clarification again to Council Member Solomon. Council Member Solomon, you're absolutely correct. The $2 million savings is not truly $2 million savings. It's about $700,000 of savings, as the debt service amount is equates to about a little bit less than $1.3 million. I believe on an annual basis, about $1.27 million on an annual basis. So it's a little over $700,000 in savings per year.
Okay, just a factor of three there in us overstating our savings. If we can go back to the prior slide, I have a question on that.
All right. So on that, our unfunded liability was in June 30th, 2020, 67. No, I'm sorry. God, go down there. Was, hold on. I'm sorry. Let me take a look at this so I can see this. Okay. It was the, I'm looking at line, I'm sorry, the net unfunded actuary or accrued liability was $25,700,000 in 2020, and it dropped by about $1.7 million the next year, and the percentage was 61.7%, and then it went up to 66.1%. So wasn't that a positive increase?
Yes, it was a positive increase, and as Mr. Gephardt had talked about before, much of that was due to the 27.8% investment return that we had last year, but of course that was not available until after you had already made the decision, because keep in mind, you were making this decision a year ago, and this June 30, 21 actuarial valuation was not available until, as Mr. Gephardt pointed out, in December of this past December.
Okay, but basically what was going on is we had been paying in about $3 million a year to our pension fund, if I recall correctly, $1 million to cover current obligations of basically the future, and $2 million to get us back up to the, quote, unfunded liability. And we've been, at that rate, was projected we would have paid off that $27 million in 14 years. So the town was paying money into that. We were actually decreasing our unfunded liability at a reasonable rate. So it looked like, or I guess I'd like to know, is were we doing all right? Were we above average of what comparable communities were at a 66.1%? Or were we doing horrible? What was our, how was the town doing? My recollection was that we were above average.
Mr. Mayor and Council Member Solomon, you're correct. You were above average from that perspective. And I would characterize this as probably one of those things that are good, better, and best. You were doing very well. I think that as a collective body, as a town, you looked at it and you had an opportunity to probably do better than that. And you looked at the, as Mr. Gephardt pointed out, you're going to be borrowing dollars, but you're actually going to, in the long term, generate more savings and be better funded faster and be in a better position long term, and to be able to take care of that liability faster at a lower cost to citizens than you otherwise would have done.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're here. You say we were doing very well on that. I have another question, and the town attorney, I don't want to get off the topic too much. I know it's okay, but it has to do with our ability to borrow funds. Is that within the scope of this or not?
Probably not, Councilmember Solomon.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Other questions from Councilmember Bowen, then Vice Mayor Barrett, Councilmember Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding Mr. Parsons, regarding something that you said, I wanted to get some clarification. Is it true that by accounting rules or by the ARS, we as a town were required to consider the $10 million one-time payment an expense for this fiscal year?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, yes, that is correct. Under the statutes of the state of Arizona, you're required to for that $10 million liability, even though it was exchanging essentially a balance sheet item, cash, for to reduce a liability under generally accepted accounting principles. The state law requires that to be budgeted and to be paid for as part of your budgeted expense, since you're essentially on a cash basis And on a cash basis, that would be an expenditure of funds.
Thank you. And can we go to the slide that has the pension equation on it? Mr. Parsons, there are four variables here. There's C, I, B, and E, contributions, investment income, benefits, and expenses. As a town council, which of these variables can we reasonably expect to impact?
The thing that you can reasonably expect, as you employ officers as part of this pension plan, there are the benefits there. Of course, if you hire somebody new that has a new start date, they would be in our Tier 3 plan, which is a different plan than this. This is focused on your liability of Tiers 1 and 2. Tier 3 is a shared liability plan with all the rest of the employers around the state. So that structure of that pension plan is different than the Tiers 1 and 2. So you certainly can impact the benefits depending upon if you hire someone who is already has a hire date of prior to January the 1st of 2017, you know, from that perspective. But you can also really affect this from your contribution side. And that's what you're required to do by statute every year. You're required to review your actuarial evaluation and determine if you have an unfunded liability. You're required to post on your website and report to PSPRS what your plan is to resolve that unfunded liability. In this case, at this point in time, you do not have an unfunded liability. So there's nothing there for you need for you to report and address that.
Thank you. Is it fair to say that we as a town council don't really have much impact on investment income and expenses?
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, you're correct. Essentially, by pooling all of those things into PSPRS, what you're able to do is keep those expenditures down, because if you had to manage your own investment portfolio, that expense ratio towards the amount of investment income that you would generate would be extraordinarily high. That's significantly reduced by having that pooled within PSPRS, and to where you can leverage the overall investment team at PSPRS, only pay your pro rata share of those expenses rather than having to have all that expertise that you would be paying for directly. And so that's keeping that expenditure portion lower, and it's maximizing that investment income in relation to that expense based upon the assets that you have in the plan.
Would you say then we have more control over C, the contributions, than I, investment income, or E, expenses?
Absolutely. More control over the contributions than the investment income. But the ability that you have by being in a pooled plan, that was a choice that was made years ago, that also lowered your expenses. So some time ago, by joining that pooled cost-sharing plan, you're able to reduce those expenses from the cost-sharing from the expense side.
Just a real brief statement. I perceive contributions as where town council can have a meaningful impact upon our pension funding issues, and that's why I was fully in support at a time when we do have reserves to make the contributions that are needed to put us in a 105% funding situation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Partridge, for your presentation. I've got a couple of questions. One, can we go back to the slide about the 66.1% funded that was being referenced earlier? There you go, the funded ratio. Maybe the other one where it shows the prior years. Let's see. Okay, so when we look at that, this is talking about June 30th, 2020. Up to that point, in addition to great investment returns, we had also made extra contributions to increase that funded ratio, hadn't we?
You were making the Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Barrett, yes, you were making those required unfunded liability amortization contribution payments. And those were the amounts calculated by the actuaries. That's actually a required amount that to be paid. It wasn't discretionary on your part. That was part of the statutory construct for the contribution rate.
Mr. Right. Mayor, if I may just add into that, because I have a little more context here than Mr. Partridge. The town council, as you'll recall, the town was making an additional $500,000 payment towards the unfunded liability in addition to the unfunded liability amortization payment and the normal cost payment that were required.
And we did that twice, right?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, that is correct. We did that 2 years in a row.
Okay, so part of this decrease in the unfunded liability, it's a couple of factors, great returns on that year, and also the fact that we paid an extra $1 million towards that unfunded liability. But I also want to get clarification on something, and this is probably something we'll have to maybe ask you to return to us an answer, but this idea about we were above average, back when we were making this decision, I went to the PSPRS and ranked the funding ratios of every city and town. We were actually, if you put them all in order, we were right at the top of the bottom half in terms of our funding ratio at that time. So maybe that was in 2019 or something. But I'm just wondering if maybe you can get back to us on what our standing was before, you know, we took this, because we hear a lot, well, we were funded above average, we're funded less than average. And so I think that would be helpful for future clarification.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Barrett, really appreciate that, because when you look at it, you were above average for the plan as a whole, because the plan as a whole was less than 50% funded. But you are correct. When you rank the cities and towns, you were probably about in the middle of the pack, if you will, because we do have some large cities, such as the city of Phoenix, that has a lower funding percentage. And since they are so much larger than a lot of the other cities and towns around the state, they tend to bring the overall average of the plan down. But they are still one employer for their police and then, of course, their fire plan as well. So though they're two plans, but they are very, very large. So you are probably about, if you look at the number of towns above you versus below you, you are probably about right in the middle of those plans. And I would agree with your statement. And I don't think that changed much from, frankly, from 2019 to 2021. You would have been approximately in the same place, probably a little bit better in 2021 because you did make those two additional $500,000 contributions for a total of $1 million that probably would have moved the needle a little bit, but you still would have been about in the middle.
Okay, thanks. That is really helpful because I think that clarifies a little better the two different numbers we're talking about there. So I appreciate that. So speaking of other jurisdictions, are we the only jurisdiction that took care of our pension with a pension bond near the same time with record low interest rates?
Oh, no. Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Barrett, absolutely not. There's been probably about 59 employers who have taken advantage or plans, I should say, that have taken advantage of that. And they're from cities and towns to fire districts and counties. The state has put in a significant amount of dollars, and they're currently considering paying off most or all of their remaining outstanding liability as well. In total, there's been about $3.5 million. Or $1 billion that has been contributed to in additional contributions through PSPRS. over last fiscal year and fiscal year 21 and so far this year and fiscal year 22. So you are not alone. It has been discussed by both the League of Cities and Towns as well as the County Supervisors Association and the Fire District Association as a best practice for people to address. Of course, everybody needs to address based upon their own unique circumstances and situation. But again, it's been a very good practice and that has generated a lot of long-term savings for citizens.
Okay, thanks. Speaking of those long-term savings, if the fund returns the 7.3% interest rate that is being expected by PSPRS, what are the savings that we can anticipate over the life of the bond or the fund or some period of time?
Would have to go through and review that and calculate that. And of course, we really won't know what those savings are until we actually achieve those savings sometime over the next 30, 40 or whatever years going forward, right? So that's a hard question to answer. The estimated savings certainly, and that gets back to this risk mitigation column that you would have here. Currently, if you look at what you have in essentially what you could call a rainy day fund at this point in time would be that 3.6 million, the 4.4, and then whatever the net is $2 million here, but as Mr. Gephardt had pointed out, net of your financing, it's about $700,000 a year. So, but that's the ongoing savings, this estimated probably. I believe that savings would grow slightly over the course of that amortization time frame. So you would probably be somewhere between $700,000 and $1 million a year savings over the next approximately 15 years.
Okay, thanks. Well, I guess what I was saying, I know it's hard to say what it will be until we see what the results are, but I'm saying if the results are what the fund is suggesting, they will be 7.3%. So you kind of, I mean, I understand there's an assumption there, but it's the assumption that's being made in the plan as a whole when we talk about how funded we are or not. So I think it's, you know, reasonable to calculate based on that assumption. So
Yes, you are correct. That is reasonable based upon that assumption. And that's the assumption that is built into all of this, because that actuarial valuation assumes that you are going to earn on average long term 7.3% going forward.
OK, so if you wouldn't mind getting us that number of if we earn 7.3%, then over the life of 20 years for the bond, how much we would save. I would be interested in seeing that.
Go ahead. We could work with Mr. Gephardt on that. Part of that analysis is going to be comparing to your debt service, but also a big part of looking at that savings is what else would you have done with that money? So right. Let's assume that you've got this approximately $8 million here in risk mitigation out here. That $8 million will essentially, quote, earn, because you have that invested, and if it earns 7.3% going forward, that would be the amount of earnings that you would have the opportunity to earn. And then you would compare that to what else would you have done with that money. For example, if you would have left it invested, what are your investments currently earning? And what would that have done? If you would have spent that money, then obviously it would earn zero. So, but we could work with Mr. Gephardt on trying to take and give you a couple of a scenario or two potentially of what that estimated savings would be.
Okay, thanks. I think... He's given us some estimates, and that is something that we looked into, you know, when we made this decision. I'm just curious where we're at now. So speaking of the returns where we're at today, from the time that we made this investment on 7/6/21 until now, do you know what our returns have been? I know you've been talking about it in terms of calendar years, but what have our returns been on the fund, on this money?
Yeah, in the current fiscal year to date, which is what I referenced before, as of January, that was 3.64%, which I believe was still higher than what your debt service was. Since that point in time, of course, the market has been down and up and a lot of volatility. Currently, the market is probably slightly higher. And the other portion of that is that about half of our portfolio is in private equity and investment returns, which really have been averaging higher than the 3.64%. They're the higher part of that. So I think that overall, the investment portfolio is probably earning higher than that. Until they're announced, I don't know what those returns are going to be, but my expectation would be as of today that they would be higher than the 3.64%.
Okay. Well, you said as of January. So do you have a number as of July when we made the investment?
Well, as of July, when you made this this investment, we had just concluded June 30. That year was 27.8%.
Okay. Okay, I think that's all my questions, at least for now. I'll let the other council members ask theirs. Thanks.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I just have one question and then a follow-up question that's pretty much related. So there's a lot of people that say that the pension was good or the decision was good or bad or they wouldn't do it. But in your professional opinion, was it a good decision?
Absolutely. If it was my money, I would do it.
Okay. And a follow-up question. So you said that it takes our future budget pressure off the town. There's two explanations. There's the more complicated explanation of how this completely works, but then there's kind of more of a layman's term. So I have a hard time trying to discuss it to tell people, like, look, this is why using some of our money that is sitting in an account earning 1% but losing 7% to inflation, and then using a pension obligation bond at 2.3% when we're supposed to be earning 7.3%. But do you have an easy way to try and explain that to people?
Yeah, I'll point out a couple of things. As you stated, there's a lot of complexity in connection with the pension calculations, and it really focuses on there's so many different estimates that go into it, and the calculation is trying to project payments over not only the career of an employee, but also throughout their lifetime as they receive those payments, right? And how long they'll live, et cetera. But to try to break it down into some of the more significant numbers that you could point to that account for a large portion of the savings, you can just look at it this way. Would you rather pay 43.47% of your payroll or 13.09% of your payroll on an ongoing basis? Now, those numbers are going to change going forward, but clearly, you're paying approximately 30% less of your total payroll. That's a significant savings to the town. Now, you also have to pay out of that your debt service. But once you get through that debt service and on an ongoing basis, you're going to be in a much better position. And you already are in a better position. And these assets are going to be earning. This isn't accounting fully for the assets that you put in, because these assets came in after this actuarial valuation was calculated. You're going to be earning more in investment income than what the actuaries were originally projected, because you put in an extra $27.6 million. So when the actuaries come back, based upon the modeler that we used, you're estimated probably to be approximately going to be 107 to 109% funded as of this next June 30th, based upon the modeler. Now, we'll see what happens with the investment returns and with other actuarial assumptions, but you can just look at that, those two change in the contribution rate, and you can look at that $700,000 ongoing savings that you've got between that and your financing that you're paying out as evidence that of the relief that you're having in the short term over the next 15 years, and then you'll have even greater relief on an ongoing basis.
And I got another, I also explained it kind of like, you know, you get a mortgage and then 30 years later, you're still paying the same payment. So that $1.3 million we're paying this year, 14 years later, our very last payment is still $1.3 million. So then as the town grows, inflation grows, still your debt service payment stays the same, but your income as a total should keep growing. And is that kind of like a wrong analogy, or is that kind of close to it, or?
I think the underlying principle is correct, but keep in mind that your pension liability will grow because you're discounting that future cash flow by 7.3%. So this present value of benefits of $81.3 million, those future cash flows are being discounted at 7.3%. Next year, you're going to be have one less year that liability is going to be discounted. So that liability is actually getting larger as you go. Of course, your assets are also earning investment income to help offset that growth in the liability. And so if your asset investment earnings can offset that 7.3%, and that's why it's discounted at 7.3%, because that's the assumed earnings rate, then you're going to have sufficient assets ultimately to be able to pay that pension liability. But that can change. We've had cities that would have maybe two or three officers get involved in a shooting or something like that. Now you have disabilities and your pension liability goes up because you have to pay for that pension, but you don't have because of the disability rules, but it was a liability that you didn't know about a year ago. And so that liability and that cash flow is going to increase that liability. So there's all kinds of things that can happen going forward that can affect that liability, which is different from the mortgage, where that's a fixed liability. That's why, in some respects, when you were able to exchange some of this to a financing where you had a certain that's being financed over a period of time, that gives you some degree of certainty over that payment. It also contributed more dollars towards this pension liability, and you're going to be able to arbitrage that difference to be able to the benefit of your citizens.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Other questions, counsel? If we could go to the slide of liability methods with the arrows that indicate where we were and where we are. Mr. Partridge, what is the approximate date of where we were for that arrow?
This arrow was the 66.1%, which is, and I just eyeballed this basically, that it would be of where you were with this actuarial accrued liability. So you were about two thirds of the way there, and now you're over that. And so this was as of June 30th of 21, and then this is where you would be as of July 6th when you made the $27.6 million payment.
And I, you know, this is probably a question for Mr. Gephardt, and Mr. Gephardt, you may or may not, but if we were to impose similar arrows for, let's say, 2005, 2010, 2015, what would that look like?
Mr. Mayor, members of council, that's a good question. Going back to 2005, our funding situation was much stronger, and it diminished through 2010, 2015. There are a number of reasons why. Mr. Partridge could probably elaborate on those. It's not really, I don't know, it's really edifying to anyone this evening. But we saw a significant degradation in our funding, and as a result of that, a significant increase in our employer rate was the result of that. We had to contribute more as a town. And as you know, I think it's been kind of alluded to this evening, the projections were moving forward that our rates were going to increase from about 40% to almost 100% of our payroll over the next 15 or 16 years as we needed to amortize the unfunded liability. So that's, you know, looking at it in today's dollars, that 40%, there's real savings, but moving forward, those savings were projected to increase even greater. You know, now those are just projections. We don't, you know, again, Mr. Partridge has done a good job explaining there's all kinds of variables and things and assumptions in that, but based upon actuarial projections for what the employer rate was supposed to do over the next 15 or 16 years, it was not a pretty picture, which obviously, hopefully, we've mitigated that risk to the town. So,
yeah, Mr. Mayor, just a couple of additional thoughts. I agree with everything that David has said. But essentially what you had, because of the volatility and interest rates that were going up and down, the PBI became dysfunctional. And so you would have investment returns that were very high, and then you would have a permanent benefit increase that was paid out, where half of that excess above 9% was being paid out in additional benefits. And then you would have maybe a loss, as you had the Great Recession, you had the dot-com bubble, you had a recession in 2003. So a number of those things that occurred where you had losses, and you would have all those losses to the plan. So the PBI was digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper and eroding that status. And this was part of that presentation that we had last time, as you may recall. Until pension reform. And then pension reform eliminated the permanent benefit increase and replaced it with a up to 2% cost of living. And since then, the funded status has leveled out. So the hole is no longer being dug deeper, but it still left the hole. And that's what you have done as a town, is you filled that hole and you've positioned yourself now well to have corrected those things that you can control, as Council Member Bowen had pointed out, where you can make those additional contributions. You now have assets that are above that actuarial accrued liability, and you have the opportunity to be able to effectively manage that going forward. And again, it's just like driving down the road. Once you're on course, if you start moving one way or another a little bit, you only have to move the wheel a little bit to be able to correct. And so you're in a very good position to be able to manage this effectively and prudently going forward.
Thank you. Other questions? I'm not seeing any additional questions. Mr. Partridge, we appreciate your presentation this evening and answering questions from council. And we appreciate your work, and Mr. Gephardt, yours as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it, 6-0. There's no regular agenda items, future agenda items.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I have a future
Council Member
agenda
Bowen.
Item. Thank you. I move to request that the council receive a staff report and have possible discussion on the options available to alleviate reported traffic congestion and safety issues, pedestrian safety issues at the Lehman Academy.
I'll second.
Seconded by Council Member Solomon. Other future agenda items?
Yes, I have.
Council Member Bowen?
Second agenda item is I move that the council receive a presentation from staff on what actions would need to be taken and the projected cost of these actions required to bring reclaimed water to each town facility that currently uses potable water for irrigation. These facilities include the Push Ridge Golf Course and any other town facilities which currently irrigate with potable water.
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Other future agenda items? Okay, hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson, I believe. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it. 6-0. Good night, everyone. Thank you.